I think anything with farmland is going to be a hot topic. I don't care what county you're in, anything with open land, 10 acres and up, I mean, even if it's only an acre or two, something along those lines with a little bit of road frontage, that's going to be a hot topic, I think. And I feel like the past few years, we were going 100 miles an hour down a dead end road, which was fun. I had a blast. But you know that that market can't sustain itself. There has to be a correction of some sort.
Welcome to Turning Profit, a podcast for people that love real estate. Learn the business models and skills that professional real estate investors use to make money and build wealth. Visit turningprofit.com for a wealth of investor resources. And now, here are your hosts, Pete and Heather Reese.
Welcome to the Turning Profit podcast. It's so great to be here once again. And today I have a very special episode, one that has been in the works for a long time. Today I am interviewing Andrew Walters with Mossio Properties. And it's a special episode because Andrew has been the broker that has sold far more properties for us than any other broker. And he really, really kicked off a lot of things that are sort of integral to our business. And I've been working on Andrew to try to get him on here for a little while. It's been hard to coordinate a little bit, but I'm so excited to have you on here. So welcome, Andrew.
I'm glad to be on.
I guess we'll start with a little bit of a story about how Andrew and I met. We had got a lead on a property that was in North Carolina. And actually, I kind of forget which property it initially. Actually, I think I had a few properties that we were under contract to buy in North Carolina. And I kind of realized that all these areas were so different at that point. And I really needed to work on broker agent relationships in order to really make this business work. And I was looking on LandWatch, I think it was, and I saw that you had a little advertisement on the side, you with your dog, Golden Retriever, right?
Yep. That's right.
Yeah, Golden Retriever. And I was like, oh, that looks like this guy looks like he knows land. So and I saw there, you know, like you've done tons of deals and all that kind of stuff. So I just gave you a call and I left a message, but kind of like one of my things always when working with new agents and stuff is like, how fast do they call back? And sure. Andrew called me back in like 5 minutes. We had an awesome conversation and I was like, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about. And I'm hopeful that that we can have a really good arrangement going forward here. So fast forward, that was probably about 3 years ago now, something like that. And fast forward since then, you've sold over 100 properties for us. At least I was trying to count them before we recorded here, but I ran out of time. I just kept losing my count. So, but I know it's well over 100 at this point. And one of the things I love about Andrew, which is really the most important things with brokers and agents that you're working with, is they actually get deals done. So Andrew's realistic on his pricing and, he understands how to price land properly. It's really allowed us to actually sell these properties, which is kind of the important thing at the end of the day, is to actually make money on the deal and move on to the next one. In the whole, you know, time we've been working together, Andrew has taught me so much about evaluating land, how to price it properly and everything. So a lot of the things I teach are probably somewhat related to what Andrew has taught me. So anyhow, I guess that's a extensive way to say that Andrew's taught me a lot. He's very knowledgeable and kind of excited to get him on here and kind of pick his brain about land and everything like that. So, and one other thing I want to mention, which is not 100% common when dealing with agents and brokers, is that Andrew has, you know, we've had a lot of opportunities to a lot of situations that have come up and everything like that. And it's really always kind of impressed upon me that he deals with things in an ethical manner as well. You know, he's always kind of like understanding, you know, what's right and what's not right. And he's always on the side of what's right. And that's really the way that I try to run my business as well. So we really kind of connected on that as well. So anyhow, that's the intro to Andrew. And he's really kind of an amazing resource for me. So anyhow, all that being said, maybe a good place to start is to kind of like tell us about your journey in, you know, your land business, your land sales business, and kind of what it initially drew you to land in the first place.
I grew up in a hyper rural area to start off with. You could probably tell by my accent. So it is what it is. I can't hide it at this point. So just embrace it. So I grew up on, it was only about 3 or 4 acres, but we had 400 acres next to me. And there was a little pond and everything. And my brother was 4 years older than I was. So when he turned 16, he got his license. He was out, you know, dating girls and everything else. And I was like 12 years old, stuck at home. So I would just ride the four-wheeler, ride the dirt bike, you name it, go out there. And I'd spend the time fishing and hanging out with my dogs and all that stuff. So I've always had a connection to it. I don't mind, you know, I was never the one who was able to skateboard, you know, rollerblade. There was no concrete around me. So when I went to, you know, get a college degree, I went to North Carolina State University, about an hour from home. And they had a wildlife and fishery science degree, which interested me because I love to hunt, love to fish, love wildlife. That's what I did. And, you know, I enjoyed every minute of it. So I graduated in 2014. And that spring that I was graduating, I got an ad on the back of the Wildlife in North Carolina magazine. And at the time, I was actually writing for them. I wrote for them. I wrote a little bit for the National Wild Turkey Federation, Quality Deer Management Association, Mossy Oak. I was like a freelance outdoor author or writer. And I'd write these articles and get paid for them. And, you know, I never really considered sales, honestly. And, you know, my father was always in insurance and, you know, at Farm Bureau. So I enjoyed riding around, talking to farmers, talking to people who owned, you know, tractors and all kinds of equipment. So I kind of fit right into that lifestyle. There was nothing I really wanted to sell. I didn't want to sell insurance. I didn't want anything to do like that. So I called the number on the back of the Mossy Oak ad. And it was Billy McGowan, who's now my business partner. But before he was my business partner, he hired me, trained me. He was my mentor professionally there. Billy was like, yeah, man, I'll get you down in Mississippi, which is where Mossy Oak's based out of. And I told him, I said, well, I'd much rather stay in North Carolina. And he said, well, if you get your license, you got a job. I said, all right. I mean, it was like that. I mean, that was how I got hired. And I went and got my license. And then I met him and started working with him. And I worked part-time in our office. I was working part-time in the one in Greenville, North Carolina, and was doing uploading listings for other people, stuff like that. Got my license, started doing a little bit more sales, got into it. And then, you know, a few years later, had a good enough sales record. The opportunity presented itself to where I could move up to be, you know, the broker in charge. So that's what I did. That was in 2017 or 2018. And I stayed in that position until, you know, January of this year. January of 2024, the opportunity presented itself to be a co-owner in the firm. So that's what I did. It's always been a goal of mine. I say it's always been a goal since I started the career. I could see myself doing that. So yeah, I'm pretty excited. So this year's been an adjustment because I have my sales and I have my day-to-day team management. And then there's the co-ownership of the entire, you know, firm and franchise. But it's fun, man. I love it. So
yeah, well, that's amazing. Well, I was really excited for you when you actually stepped into that ownership role as well. So that's an amazing thing and a whole new journey, right?
That's right. That's right.
I was looking on your bio too before I got on here, and looks like you've won a bunch of awards too. What are the you're like top producer in 2023 and agent of the year in 2022? So. You love those awards, huh? Are they all behind you there?
Yeah, I got them behind me. So, but believe it or not, I'm not that awards driven, but I happened to put together a couple decent years. So I figured I might as well hang them up.
Think you're being humble. You're being humble. You and I have worked together on over 100 deals, like we were saying. And from your perspective, what makes a real estate investor a strong partner for a land broker like yourself?
The first thing is their ability to, you know, convey information to me. And I know that sounds wild, but you know, you'd be surprised at people who are just like, it's parcel ID number and they send it to me. And I'm like, well, what county? what am I supposed to do with this? You know, and I get that, you know, if somebody says, hey, I'm buying a property at this point, at this price point, you know, I don't mind knowing that information. It's really irrelevant, but it does help me to kind of gauge because if you know, I'm helping them price 15 properties and 10 of them, they're way too high on, that lets me know, all right, well, there's an issue with either their mailer or something along those lines. There's a disconnect. So I think the main thing is getting properties that are actually being able to purchase, you know, at a reasonable rate and then conveying that information. What are they looking for? You know, is this something that you're doing just once or twice a year? Is this, you know, so you want to just shoot for the highest amount, or is this something that you're trying to get rid of in, you know, 30 to 60 days? I mean, outlining what their motives are and the time frame in which they want to achieve those goals really helps us. I mean, our goal is to get you the highest and best price, but you know, it depends on how motivated you are as well. I mean, we might have to adjust pricing or we can do something different along those lines.
Hey everyone, just a quick reminder that you can join our community for free at landconquest.com. Inside, you'll get all the resources, training, and support for building a thriving land flipping business. Once again, that's landconquest.com. All right, enjoy the rest of the show.
Yeah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, like, really, this business doesn't work too well if you are paying too much for some of these properties. And I'm an optimist, too. Like, I always look at a property and I'm like, oh, I think I could sell it for this or something like that. But sometimes reality is a little less than what my optimistic thoughts are sometimes. But sometimes, you know, sometimes you actually even outpace that, you know, as an investor. You just don't know. I've learned kind of like over our time of dealing together and lots of other properties too, that the quality properties always seem to sell, you know, like quickly, you know. And if you're able to price them at even like market price and you have a quality property, then, you know, that's going to sell pretty fast generally, because there's, you know, there's a lot of stuff that hits the market and it seems like a lot of the stuff is not maybe super quality. They always have issues in some way or another, you know, like every piece of land is different. And, but whenever you get a premium property, it really is fun because you know that, you know, it's going to sell and it'll sell quickly. So for investors that are actually buying properties, like pieces of land, what are the key factors that they should consider before buying?
What we're seeing in my area is, you know, the land market's still strong. I mean, post-COVID, things are rolling strong. Interest rates haven't deferred, you know, or deterred us really at all. You know, because for years, land loans were not the same as a regular mortgage. It's usually 20 to 30% down, and they're doing them for 15 years. And they're doing them at 8 and 10%. And they were doing them like that years ago because the banks were requiring more money down in their financing for half the time frame. So obviously, they're going to hit you harder over the interest rate. When the realtors were struggling with these rate increases over the past few years, I'm not going to say I thought it was funny, but I thought it was a little interesting because they're the same rates that we've always had to deal with. So they were like, well, how do we overcome the buyer reluctance? And I was like, well, that's what we've always had to do in land, because land's not an easy thing to buy. It's not 10% down for 30 years. You just can't do that. So I look for properties, you know, usually 100,000 and less is going to sell quickly. It doesn't mean we can't sell anything higher than that. You know, of course we can, but $100,000 and less, that means people can put $20,000-$30,000 down. That's going to move relatively quickly. If you've got anything with any amount of timber on it, somewhat mature, it doesn't have to be planted, it doesn't have to be managed, just something that has some type of renewable resource present. And of course, anything with farmland on it. Anything that you could potentially build a house on, put a shelter, a small cabin, lease out for agriculture income, anything like that.
I love getting farmland because farmland always sells fast.
It does, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah, it seems like there's just buyers out there for nice pieces of farmland. So,
oh, yeah.
What do you think are the most common mistakes that investors make when they're purchasing a piece of land?
Not having an agent that knows exactly what that land is worth. Or, you know, good or bad. You know, each tract of land is different. I mean, we have a place in Wilson County, North Carolina. There's a little township called Black Creek. And right next to it is a little town called Lucama. Right? It looks like Lucama, but it's eastern North Carolina, so it's Lucama. They're 10 minutes apart. But the land values vary drastically because of the soil types. And those soil types in Lucama are fantastic for sweet potatoes. So it's one of the few places, and actually NC State's agricultural school worked with a local farmer there in Lucama to develop a new strain of sweet potatoes that they actually have taken to Africa because the soil types were somewhat similar. So there's, you know, you've got 10 acres here and 10 acres here, and they're 15 minutes apart, but the soil types are completely different. And one's worth an extra $3,000 an acre compared to this one. And if you don't know that, you don't know it. And that's knowledge that comes from being local. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter how good of a realtor you are. It doesn't matter, you know, what your marketing looks like. And you've got to have somebody who's local. So that's what I've always said. You need a realtor with a national brand, a national presence, but they got to have the local knowledge, or else you know, really, you know, the realtor is going to end up handcuffing you before you can even really get started. That would be the main thing, is interviewing these realtors to make sure that they actually know what they're doing. We know, ask them tough questions. I mean, you know, ask them what their days on market are. What's the relationship of the percentage between the asking price and the sold price? Ask them what their marketing strategy is in addition to the MLS. What's crazy about where we're at is, you know, we have several competitors and they do not use the MLS. And from a land perspective, you know, we don't rely on the MLS. I'll say that up front. You know, our franchise, you know, works. We have 15 different MLS systems that we integrate. We don't rely on them, but we do use them. My argument is, you know, how can you claim to have the best exposure for your client if you're willingly leaving properties off of the MLS? A lot of these agents, they may not be well versed in land. They may need help with showings, but that doesn't mean it's not in your seller client's best interest to have them on that website, to have them on that, you know, wherever that MLS feeds to. It feeds to Zillow and everything else. So redfinhomes.com. So I think it's funny when our competitors talk about, you know, we offered the best exposure and they're willingly leaving properties off of the MLS. And a lot of it's greed, if I'm being honest with you. A lot of it is they don't want to have to co-broke. They don't want to have to share commissions. And once again, that goes back to not serving your clients. You know, it's not all about the maximum amount of commission. Can you get the highest and best price for your client in a timely fashion? And, you know, that's the issue we have. So these are questions people need to ask your realtor. In fact, you know, on our website, landandfarmsrealty.com, it has a why you should work with us. And you can print a PDF page and it has a checklist. And it's got a green checklist of everything we do. And if somebody says they're interviewing another realtor, I encourage them to print that off and go interview that other realtor. I supply them with the questions to interview another realtor because I'm confident
that's great.
That at the end of the day,
that's we're gonna have
it's a job, it's a business. And you know, when you trust somebody to list and sell a property for you, it's okay to interview them. It's okay to ask the difficult questions. You got to figure it out. And you know, unfortunately, not all realtors are cut out to do it. So.
That exposure is everything because, you know, in certain properties, we market it for a few months and, you know, we might have one buyer that steps forward or a potential buyer. But, you know, sometimes, you know, there's multiple buyers that come and step forward at the same time. And if you're marketing it out there and the maximum amount of people are seeing it, that can be the difference of selling it for 20 grand below the list price and selling it 20 grand above the list price if you get multiple offers or something. So, I mean, that's real money that could be in your pocket as opposed to missing out on that entirely. So,
and one more thing I'll add to that is, you know, ask them under what circumstances do you consider dual agency? Because with land, it's not uncommon. And there may be a property that's so unique, the listing agent needs to go sell it. But there may be instances where it's really tough to serve two masters. So yeah, as you know, I have a number of agents on my team and I hand those leads off. I make sure they're qualified. I make sure they follow up with them. But I'll hand them off in case I do get into a multiple offer situation. Even though obviously no ethical lines would get crossed, it doesn't look good for me to submit an offer and along with four other people. And you know, if I end up having the highest and best offer and I did everything ethically, nobody's going to believe it. You know, they're going to believe that you and me had communications and stuff like that. So it's easier for me to hand those leads off. There have been circumstances where we've had, you know, unique properties where I'm just like, you know what, I got to do it myself. But for the most part, that's not the case. So I'm not for or against dual agency, but it's a great question to ask. Under what circumstances would you consider it and would you not consider it?
Yeah, that's a good point, too. And I don't think I've really talked about that too much. I mean, personally, I don't mind, you know, when I trust the agent that I'm working with, the listing agent or broker I'm working with, I really don't mind the dual agency thing at all because I view it kind of as a situation where getting the deal done is the most important thing. And I just feel like sometimes when there are a lot of different agents in or you know, a couple agents involved, sometimes things get more complicated than they need to be, you know? So
yeah, it can go both ways for sure.
Yeah. So that's a little bit of a side tangent, I guess. But so we have worked on deals of all acreage ranges. Smallest was probably an acre. Maybe, I don't even remember, all the way up to 615 acres was our biggest one, I think we did. How does your approach change when working with the larger tracts versus kind of the smaller ones?
Well, the smaller tracts are obviously going to be more affordable. So let's say you're dealing with 5 acres and under, you're checking a lot of boxes. There's somebody who's looking to just park money for, you know, like an investment perspective. They might want to build on it. You know, they're just looking somewhere where they can take the kids and ride four-wheelers, ride horses, something like that. 615 acres of timberland, that's a completely different buyer. So, you know, they're going to want to know what the timber's worth. They're going to want to have a timber cruise so they can figure out, you know, what percentage is hardwoods versus pines and what the timber market's like. So from a marketing perspective, it's understanding that property, looking at, you know, on 600 acres, you know, or close to it, you're going to want to know what the soil types look like. You're going to want to know if it floods, what areas may be best for this type of farmland or this type of crop. So it's really understanding the buyer. You have to look at a property and say, who's going to buy this? And then you have to mold your marketing into something that is eye-catching for that particular buyer. It also works with your property description. You know, what I love is when people, and I'm being highly sarcastic, so when they take a picture of, you know, the GIS and they're like, 17 acres for sale, $200,000, no low balls. And they just, I'm like, that's not, you know, like, tell me how much road frontage there is. You know, can you build a house or two? You know, is there a well present? Is there county water? I mean, like, tell me these things. So I guess it's, you know, in the property descriptions, you want to cover the details that would be, you know, pertinent information for that particular buyer. So once again, that goes back to having a realtor, I guess, who understands this is the buyer for this property and this is the buyer for that property. And you have to mold your marketing into that.
Such a good point, because viewing things through other people's eyes is the key to a lot of good business, really, and marketing, because you need to be able to, you know, be the right magnet for those people, you know, that right potential buyer that, you know, would be interested in this property. And like, what are the questions they are going to be asking? What to put yourself in their shoes and try to understand, like, okay, what's important to me, you know, when I'm looking for properties. And if you can kind of mold your marketing to that, I think it's your chances of success are much greater. So you still like going out and doing your own drone photos and drone videos and all that stuff, huh?
My time is severely limited compared to what it used to be. But I do enjoy getting out in the field doing that. I do. I don't mind hiring a photographer to do it, but I've done it for so long and admittedly a little peculiar about how my marketing looks, because you only get one chance at a first impression. And you want to make sure that when a property goes live, that it looks the best that it can. You don't want to have subpar photos that you go back and, all right, in a week from now, I'm going to update them, because, you know, people have a bad habit of looking at it and they just move on. If it doesn't catch their eye, it doesn't. So sometimes it's best to wait, especially, you know, the first quarter in North Carolina, we get a lot of weird weather. It could be cloudy and 70 degrees. It could be 40 degrees and sunny the next day. So having, you know, sunny day to take photos, blue sky, that stuff matters. And after a while, you see how quickly those properties sell compared to the ones that have the drab days and it's cloudy and overcast and foggy. It's not an accurate representation of the property. So I like to take my photos because I know the conditions in which will make the best photos. But I have used a photographer a time or two or 10. It just depends on what my schedule is like. But if I can, I do like to get out in the field and take the photos.
You're in the ownership role now, and things are, you probably don't have the time to do some of those things that you like to do. You know, just it's just things change, I guess. So getting on to kind of like what you're seeing going forward here, what do you think we're in for in 2025 here? Are there certain types of properties that you're seeing a lot of demand for? You anticipate a lot of demand for certain types of properties coming into the next year?
I think anything with farmland is going to be a hot topic. I don't care what county you're in. If, you know, and I don't do a lot with commercial development. I don't, you know, but I can see where that would, you know, start to pick up some maybe. But anything with open land, 10 acres and up. I mean, even if it's only an acre or two, something along those lines with a little bit of road frontage, that's going to be a hot topic, I think. And I feel like the past few years we were, you know, going 100 miles an hour down a dead end road, and which was fun. I had a blast. But you know that market can't sustain itself. There has to be a correction of some sort. And I feel like, you know, that's occurring. So now I feel like we're going much quicker than we were, you know, 10 years ago. But maybe we're going like 80 down an interstate now, you know, or it's not 100 down a dead end road. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's a little bit tougher to get listings. I wouldn't be surprised if the days on market ticks up slightly. But I think overall, I mean, there's still plenty of people interested in buying land. We're not seeing the land prices drop. We're not seeing anything along those lines. I don't have any indicators on my end to suggest that the interest in land is dwindling at all.
Are you looking to scale your land flipping business quickly? Well, we're happy to present our new cutting-edge system built specifically for land flippers. Take a look at the Land Conquest Business System today, and you'll gain full access to a customizable pre-made website, CRM, dedicated phone numbers, text automations, 24/7 support, and more. It's basically a business in the box. Go to software.landconquest.com to learn more.
I guess the second half of this year was a little bit slow. People were in limbo mode, I guess, as we talked about. You know, it seems to always happen before the elections and everything. But it does seem that things have really picked up afterwards. And we're, you know, looking forward to some good land sales in 2025, hopefully. So there's always miniature ups and downs in any real estate market. You know, we're just kind of, hopefully we avoid those huge swings. You know, that's, those are really disruptive. Even huge swings on the upside, they're not really disruptive as a, they're not really a bad thing, I guess, but they're challenging in a way to really, you know, understand what pricing is and everything like that. So as someone that's kind of deeply connected to Eastern North Carolina and beyond, how do you think rural land markets are kind of evolving post-pandemic? Do you think that there is a trend for people to move outside the cities, or do you see, you know, I know that that seemed like a little trend for a while. Do you see that continuing, or do you think people are fine moving back into the cities and that kind of thing?
A little bit of each. I mean, I see where people are more, you know, content to move back into the cities, but also, you know, since the pandemic occurred, you know, we used to get questions. All right, is there internet? Is there cell service? Will it perk? Well, now basically it's just, will it perk? Because, I mean, you can get a Starlink, even though, despite the issues that I'm obviously having with my internet, for the most part, Starlink, you can just plug and play. And you can get a meeting. I mean, you can plug that up in a vehicle. So we don't get those questions. So I guess people aren't scared of the cities by any means, but they're not nearly as reluctant to be 30, 40 minutes out. And, as, you know, for years, I think people were thinking, all right, the market's going to crash. You know, I'm going to wait for the prices to go down. And the prices went up, and so did interest rates. So it's one of those deals now to where they're thinking, all right, well, I'd love to have land, let's say in my example, 20 minutes from Raleigh, but the price per acre drops by $3,000 if I'm 45 minutes from Raleigh. Well, that's not ideal, but, you know, like I said, you get a Starlink and you're good to go. You know, you still get Verizon or US Cellular, and they're like, all right, well, it's fine. It's no big deal. So I see it going both ways. I've seen people want to sell their property because they're moving back. You know, a lot of corporations and companies are requiring the work from home has to end. You have to go back into the office, and that's affected them. But I've also seen some people who, as long as they have internet, they're good to go. So I can see it going both ways. But I'm not seeing a mass exodus from rural land to get back into the city, though.
Our company, we're fully remote. You know, none of us go into a specific office to work. We're all, I think there's a lot of companies that kind of operate at that level. I do think as well that, you know, with anything, there's always extremes. You know, it's like, you know, when COVID hit and everything, everyone was work from home. And then inevitably there'll be a swing back to like, oh, we got to get everyone back in the office. But maybe the right balance is more of a hybrid thing anyhow. Maybe it's 3 days in the office or 2 days in the office. And like there's kind of a balance, I think, that would, you know, allow the right work to get done, but also allow people to have some more flexibility in their lives. You know, like that's one of the best benefits of working with us is you get some flexibility. You know, you got to run off to doctor's appointment, or you've got to, you know, drop your kids off at school or something like that. Like that's all cool. You know, like if you're going to an office every day or something like that, it's a little tougher to have the kind of life that you want, I guess. So, but I personally feel like the rural land market is going to remain strong just because, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to have it both ways, I guess. So we've done a lot of like different types of deals, you know, like we've sold lakes. There was one that we did that was kind of a challenge. You know, it was basically, it was a lake that was, it was almost like it was part of a community, like a lake in the middle of the community. And somehow I ended up with this property, and then the homeowners were upset that I ended up with this lake, and they wanted it back, I guess. But we navigated through that because, you know, the buyers, they formed their own association. They bought the lake back and we got it to them at a great price. So it was kind of a win-win at the end. But all that to say, we've done a lot of complicated, you know, type deals, and you've collaborated with a lot of other brokers. So what's the key to building some strong, like repeat relationships in the business?
You know, according to the new National Association of Realtors rules, we don't have to pay anybody buyer's agent commissions. And, you know, I think there's good and bad to that. From a land perspective, I think it's, you know, you have to offer some sort of compensation. They know, for the most part, any of the realtors that we work with, they know that we offer, you know, compensation, and we don't mind stepping out of the office to help them show a property. Sometimes you may have, you know, a residential agent who's not well versed in land and they need help showing a property, but they have that relationship with the buyer. And that relationship supersedes her knowledge or their knowledge. Usually it's a her, but, you know, usually their knowledge. So, yeah, we don't mind at all. You know, we'll go out in the field and provide maps and help them. And they know that you're going to get a level of expertise and assistance, you know, they try to help sell the property to, you know, benefit both of our clients. From dealing with, you know, a seller perspective, the key is always offering, you know, quick communication and you know, top-notch marketing. I mean, that's the main thing. We've got to make sure that respond in a timely fashion. If I can't, somebody's got to, you know, if you've got questions, we've got to get them answered. I can't take 3 days, 4 days to answer an email, you know. So I think being able to communicate in a timely fashion, give them updates on what's happening in the market. You know, all right, look, so this property's kind of stagnant. All right, it's going stale. Why is that? Could it be the access? Is it, you know, the time of year? You know, just provide some insight and, you know, what your thoughts are there. Like a benchmark of activity, you know, where are we at this point? Always stay in communication because, you know, there's plenty of realtors who list a property and they're keeping tabs on it. They're doing their best to sell it, but they're falling short at the communication level with their clients. Their clients don't know how hard they're actually working for them. So if a realtor is going to work hard for them, make sure you convey that information, let them know. And, you know, sometimes you might give them some information and they say, look, you know, we got to reduce the price. I mean, you know, this is working against us. Sometimes it's, you know, there's no need. We're getting plenty of interest, just no offers. So we're tracking in the right direction. Let's hold tight. But at the end of the day, I mean, communication's always key. Communication's always key.
So many problems can be avoided, you know, with proper communication. You know, I see so many things that happen in the real estate business. And if there was just simply the right communication, a lot of those problems wouldn't have even become a problem in the first place. So it's crazy. I just don't think that a lot of people realize how important it is. So what advice would you give to a real estate investor looking to scale up from buying kind of the smaller tracks? You know, typically the smaller tracks, the maybe the 1 to 5 acre ones are easier to buy, but, you know, generally less impactful. So looking to scale up from buying those smaller tracks to maybe larger, bigger deals.
Find areas, and you may need to work with, once again, another realtor who's somewhat local. Find areas in which larger tracks sell well. Where I live an hour east of Raleigh. I can go west. The closer I get to Raleigh, the more things are going to be in line for development, commercial, 160, 170, 200 acres. That's going to be a completely different buyer, a different type of property, different type of zoning than if I were to go an hour east. You know, an hour east is, I know this sounds crazy, but an hour east, we have some of the highest density black bear populations in the lower 48. An hour west, I'm at Carter Finley Football Stadium in Raleigh, where the Wolfpack plays. So we got 2 hours right there that you can go from being in downtown Raleigh to, you know, being surrounded by black bears. That 200 acres is going to sell drastically different than that 200 acres. So it's not just having the right agent, it's having the right property in the right area if you're going to sell large acreage.
That's a good point. Have you ever like been out like looking at a property and seen a bear?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's
really
quite common. It's quite common.
Do you take like bear spray with you or something?
I have some in my truck, but I don't take it with me. Usually, you know, the black bears that we have, they're like the size of Volkswagens, by the way, because they eat corn and soybeans. They're massive. I mean, like their bellies will drag the ground. They are not aggressive at all. Like they're just, I mean, you see them and they'll try to run away. So they don't, you know, you're not going to have a problem with them.
But especially seeing one in the size of a Volkswagen, I think that if someone started to freak out and run, would they run after you or would they just freak out too?
There's way too much energy spent. I mean, we've seen them weigh, you know, 600 or 700 pounds. I mean, they're not quick animals. I mean, I guess they're quick and short bursts, but I could probably get away from one if I needed to, you know.
That's right. Would you climb a tree or just run?
I'd probably just try running. He might be able to climb quicker than I can. I think I could outrun him. But
you've combined your passion for the outdoors kind of with your professional work. How does like understanding the land itself, timber, wildlife, recreation, give you an edge as a broker?
I guess just having grown up in that area, you know, grown up around these things, water, you know, ponds, the sound, you know, stuff like that. I understand what people are looking for. I understand their connection. I mean, we've got people who want to move out and have like waterfront homes on the Pamlico Sound, the Albemarle Sound. And that's where, you know, I spent plenty of time on a boat out there. I've done plenty of time in the woods, you know, hunting, fishing, stuff like that. So I guess at the end of the day, it's just understanding what it is and why those particular buyers want to be there, why they're looking for this particular piece of land. And that's the main thing that a buyer wants. They want to know that you understand them and you're not just trying to write a contract. There's plenty of times where I've shown properties and I can just tell, and I'll joke around with them. But there was one time I was in my side by side and the guy was riding beside me, and I could tell the property was just not a good fit. So I just turned my side by side around. He said, "Where are we going?" I said, "Man, we're going to head home." I said, "Cause this is just not doing the trick." He was like, "Thank God. I didn't want to hurt your feelings and tell you." I said, "It's not my property. It's not going to hurt my feelings, but you know, I'm not going to waste your time or mine." I said, "So let's get a plan together and figure out what it is you're looking for. And most importantly, why do you have that connection?" And then once we figure out why you have the connection to that particular type of land, then we can go find it. But that's a really good question, is trying to figure out why people feel drawn towards certain specific areas. And you see that a lot with water, by the way. There's people like, "I just feel better around waterfront properties." And some people have the same feeling with rural land. They like being, you know, in the middle of nowhere. Also somewhat accessible. I say middle of nowhere, but I have 28 acres behind me. And in the evenings, I can take Maverick, my son, and my dog Creo, and we can walk down there, and you know, we'll see a bald eagle or two. You might see a beaver. You'll see four or five deer. And you know, he's likely going to grow up and feel like I do, because he grew up around that. So no matter what he does, where he goes when he grows up, he'll probably always have a connection there, because that's what he around growing up. So it might sound kind of like a salesman's pitch, but you just got to talk to your buyers and understand what it is they're looking for, and then help them find it. They need to actually be able to dig down and say, "This is why I want this particular type of property."
Do you have a great deal under contract? Well, submit it to partnerwithpete.com. The Partner with Pete program is a deal funding program where we will actually use our funds to complete the purchase of the property. We will do every other step of the process, including the due diligence, the transaction side, the marketing side, and the transaction on the resale side. And when all the dust settles, we will split the profits 50-50. There is no downside for you as an investor, only upside. So once again, go to partnerwithpete.com, submit your deal there, and let's get it funded.
You've seen countless real estate deals succeed and some fall through, as is always the case in this business. What's one key lesson or takeaway you'd share with investors to help them kind of achieve success in land investing?
Do as much research and due diligence on the front end as you can. If it's tough for me, like we've got some farms that we just sold, tracts of land in Duplin County, and we sold all of them. They were anywhere from 16 to 19 acres. There's three tracts side by side by side. We sold them, and you had a surveyor survey everything out and record it. Soil scientists went out there, did an extensive soil evaluation, and then we had a guy go out there, you had a guy go out there and clear some vegetation. I met him. Turns out I went to high school with the guy, but went out there and saw him out there. But any potential buyer is going to want to know, is there a survey? Will this perk? And if so, for how many bedrooms? And also, people struggle being able to look at the big picture. When they see 17 acres in a rectangular shape of just trees, they have a hard time picturing my home site. Where am I going to put my shop or my horses? When you have something cleared, it gives them a place where they can park the vehicle, get out with their wife or their children, and then they can start envisioning themselves. All right, this is where we could build a house. So basically, we provide all that information up front, because if a transaction has a due diligence period longer than about 60 or 70 days, the chances of closing that drop drastically. 60 or 70 days is a tough time frame to overcome. So the key is that people say, "Well, we need 45 days of due diligence." Why? And we've provided everything for you, you know, and we got to shorten this up. And they're like, "Yeah, I guess you're right." And next thing you know, we do a 14-day due diligence period or a 30-day due diligence, something like that. So I would do, you know, as much work as you can. If you're doing smaller tracts that have potential home sites, absolutely get a soil evaluation. Because if I've got something that's like 10 acres, and it's got some trees, a little bit of maybe a creek, some open land, I can sell that to a number of different people. If I've got 3 acres and it's just open land and it doesn't perk and I can't build on it, I'm not going to be able to sell that. A farmer's not going to buy just 3 acres. You can't hunt on just 3 acres. You know, you can't take your kid riding a four wheeler on 3 acres. You just run loops around for about an hour and then it gets tired. So, I mean, you know, you've got to know what, once again, what that potential buyer looks like and then do as much research on the front end to help shorten up your days on market. And what that allows you to do is, you know, you're going to have that time frame. It's going to take X amount of time to get a soil evaluation done. It's better to do that before you have a contract than after, because now you have to juggle a survey, a soil evaluation, earnest money, due deal. You're having to juggle all this, whereas if you did it on the front end, it's just done. It's just done and it's simple. So they can make their lives a lot easier by having their properties buttoned up as much as they can before it hits the market.
I'm totally with you on those smaller properties. The crazy thing is you would think, oh, smaller properties are easier, but they're not. You know, like those smaller properties that are, you know, under 5 acres, we kind of consider like, those are more challenging because really, a lot of times, if it's not a buildable site for whatever reason, your buyer pool is really limited.
Yeah, that's right.
Unless, you know, unless it's a very unique in some other way. Maybe you can make it as a parking lot somewhere, or I don't know, but a farm stand or something. But you don't have a lot of potential uses if it's not buildable under that size. So I love doing the bigger properties just because, you know, potential home site, potential recreation, you know, like there's all kinds of potential uses. And it just is, I guess, a little bit more flexibility if you miss something on your due diligence. But the key is, like you said, like do as much of that due diligence like as you can, because know what you're buying, you know. And when I started, our due diligence was very, very minimal, you know, and I kind of lucked out in a number of cases because everything turned out all right on some of those properties. But now we're way more extensive, and we've been able to catch some, you know, some problem properties before we actually close on them and buy them. So you don't want to buy problem properties. They waste a lot of your time. You won't make any money. And it's just, you know, it's just a drain. Okay. So what's next for you and your business? And as you continue to grow in this industry, are there any big goals or milestones that you're working forward towards?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So we're very much goal oriented. We're very driven. So we've got an office in Franklin, Virginia. And we just opened up a new one in Bedford, Virginia, which is the western part. So we've now got 2 offices in Virginia. We opened up 1 in Myrtle Beach. And then we've got 1 basically in North Raleigh, Greenville, and the Outer Banks. So we've got them in, you know, all 3 states. Our goal is to do, you know, $100 million in sales. We calculate our sales a little bit differently. There's 2 different standards. You know, some people, if they were to do like a $1 million deal, and our competitors do this, by the way, if they do a $1 million deal and they get both sides of it, they count it as $2 million. But we don't do that. We do $1 million. It's $1 million.
That's some fancy math.
$1 million. So, you know, our competitors will create banners and they'll display them at trade shows and they have a little asterisk at the bottom. And it's like, you know, what they'll do is, I think it's funny, if you don't mind me saying, they'll wait for our graphics to come out to see what our numbers are. And then they'll create their own graphics to go on their social media. But they got to go and add like a little footnote that, so let's say that we were trying to do 100 million last year. We did 98.6. Well, they came out and said they did 100 million. But if you read the fine print, it was dating back to 2019. So they have to backdate their numbers. So it's, you know, it's all about, you know, anyway, so my point is, we would like to hit 100 million, and that's what we're trying to do. I think we might be a little bit short this year, but we're getting there. We've made some large gains, you know, in that right direction. You know, in 2011, I think we did like $11 million in sales, and last year we were at 98.6 million. So if we don't get it this year, we'll definitely get it next year. But the key for us is, you know, realtors can be tough to deal with. They can be tough to hire. And one thing that we value is our culture. We're very protective about who we let on the team, how they operate on the team. I don't do referral agreements with agents on my team. You know, you've seen a couple of guys that I work with. I don't have to have written documentation that I handed a buyer lead off to them. You know, we do handshakes, and that's what we operate. If I can't shake your hand and trust that you're going to go do this, I don't want you on my team. Now, I can't control if you're with another firm and I have to cooperate with you, but as far as who I let on my team, so we always want to grow. That's always a big thing. We want to just continue to grow and expand. But at the same time, you know, you need more than just a license and a pulse to be a member of the team. You know, we're very strict about who we let on. So adding people who can make our team better and continuing to grow. And most of all, just expanding the footprint and the coverage in which we can continue to help our clients. That's the ultimate goal.
So are you actively looking or recruiting, you know, agents for all these different offices?
We do everything from print ads to social media ads, stuff like that. We pretty much keep that going year round.
I guess if you're an agent and you're thinking that this could be a good match for you, then reach out to Andrew. So, or if you're an investor, I don't know if you're taking on new clients or not at this point, but if you're an investor, definitely connect with Andrew. And if he can't help you, I'm sure he's got someone on his team that that'll be able to help you as well. So is there any questions that I should have asked you that that I didn't?
You know, just a couple of things that I want to go back to interviewing the agents, because that matters a lot to me. One thing that I want investors to understand that they may not is one of the reasons why it's tough to find an agent is because a lot of them, they're looking to make a dollar so quickly that they're not really thorough and they're not following the ethical standards that they should as a realtor. In other words, like I'll joke around with my guys, like everybody wants a Pete until it's time to price Pete properties, right? Once it's time to do that, they're like, I don't really want to do that. Well, see, here's the deal is that let's say that you inherited a piece of land and I tell you it's worth $100,000, but then I do my math wrong and it's actually worth $75,000. Well, it's all the same to you because you inherited it. And you're like, well, it's a gut punch, but it is what it is. But I can't be that far off with my pricing when I advise someone to buy a piece of land. When you're advising somebody to wire funds to purchase a property, you better be certain that your numbers are right. And a lot of agents do not want that responsibility. They don't want to have egg on their face if they're wrong. So if you're struggling to find an agent, that's probably what it is. So just keep calling, keep checking around. They want you to give them a property. And also what they'll do is they'll say, well, he bought it for this. So here's the market value, but I'm going to price it here. Well, that's irrelevant. You need to price it at the fair market value. You know, so I've had people before, they'll look and they're like, where's this corporation out of California at? I'm like, yeah, they're good guys. I know them. Done a ton of transactions with them. And they say, well, you know, I see he bought it for X amount and I'm just not going to pay the asking price. And I'll joke around with them. And I'm like, just pretend he inherited it for free. It's all the same. And they're like, how you obtained the property or the price you paid is irrelevant, right? It's all about what the fair market value is. So I think when land investors struggle to find the right agent, that has a lot to do with it. So just keep calling, stay on top of it. If you're not getting answers in a timely fashion, kick them to the curb, find somebody who can.
Great points. And by the way, I should follow up on a couple of those things. We have met in person. That was fun. We took a road trip and we were out in North Carolina for a few days. We actually met out there in person. So that was a lot of fun. And your pricing, and I don't think I mentioned this yet, your pricing has always been super accurate. That is like one of the most the critical things in this business. You know, like that's one of our due diligence steps is to get a broker opinion on what, you know, what the property is worth from someone who's local that knows what they're talking about. And, you know, we've dealt with a lot of agents all over the country and sometimes their opinions of value are wildly off and which causes a problem when we don't make any money or something like that. So we've never been in that situation on any of your opinions. We've always made money on all the properties that we've purchased in your area, thanks to your opinions and everything. Highly, highly underrated thing there is the accuracy of the pricing because it's everything. You know, if that price is way off and we're you know buying a property for too much, then it's just a waste of time for everyone.
Any reasonable real estate agent should be able to complete a CMA, as we call them, you know, comparative market analysis, and deliver that to you. It's not anything that we've done. I think we have a good enough track record to bypass that. But if you've never worked with somebody, say, you know, I need to see what the comps are to support this. I mean, any agent working on an MLS system, their respective MLS system should be able to pull the comps. You export it into a PDF and you email it. You know, if you're going to throw out a price per acre or a suggested marketing strategy, I don't think it's too much to ask, where did you get these prices from?
And the crazy thing is, you know, working with someone very experienced is important as well, because I'm sure a lot of these properties that we send over to you, you're thinking to yourself, oh, this is like really similar to that other property I sold, you know, one street over, you know, last year or something like that. Like, and you remember like what kind of activity you got. You remember what challenges you may have faced in the marketing and how you priced it and where it ended up and all that kind of stuff. So a lot of that information, it's not on the MLS when you're pulling comps and everything like that. So it's interesting because that's like a flywheel effect. You know, as you do more and more deals, you've got more and more, you know, experience to kind of draw back from. And it's kind of invaluable when it comes to the pricing, for sure.
Yeah. You know, another thing I think is really interesting is there's been times where, speaking about the properties that, you know, I've sold before, I drive my wife crazy because we'll be driving somewhere and I'm like, sold that one and that one. And I was with one of my agents the other day. We were driving about an hour and a half north of here and I counted like 15 properties I'd sold. He's like, shut up, Andrew. And I was like, I was just say it, man.
Well, this is a lot of fun. I'm glad you came on the podcast here. And yeah, definitely reach out to Andrew if there is anything you've got going on in Eastern North Carolina is mostly your thing. And I think you mentioned you've got an office in Virginia now and in South Carolina, right? Too.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. So you're all over the place. Going to be the whole Eastern Seaboard here pretty soon.
Maybe one day.
Well, thanks a lot, Andrew. I really appreciate your time and everything. And thanks for coming on the podcast.
Absolutely, Pete. I enjoyed it. It was a pleasure.
One quick thing. Where can people find you?
So you can find me on Facebook. Be a good place. That's at NC Land Pro, North Carolina, NC, and Land Pro, LANDPRO. You can also go on our website at landandfarmsrealty.com. Or you could type in Mossy Oak Andrew. I'll come up.
Yeah, that's true. That's what That'll I do work. To find you. So
yeah, there
that's
you
how
go.
I found your bio. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew. And great having me on the show.
I appreciate it.
Ready to start turning profit yourself? Head to turningprofit.com to step up your real estate investing game. See you on the next episode.